Welcome into the first edition of Off the Woodwork, the brand new soccer podcast from 92.9 The Game. I'm your host, Kyle Tate, joined by Craig Carlos Valentino, who I'll just call CCV for short.
Too many names.
Your name is way too long, man.
Well, that's what happens when you're like black, Mexican, Italian. You get three names, man.
It takes me a full 90 minutes just to get your name out.
Exactly. Well, that's what happens here at 92.9 The Game. No one can ever get my name right anyway, so we're good.
Well, Atlanta is going through an amazing time right now. Last night, we're recording this on Monday night. So last night at Bobby Dodd Stadium, the opener for the brand new MLS franchise, Atlanta United. And this podcast called Off the Woodwork will be a weekly look at not only Atlanta United, but MLS, soccer as a whole, how it's growing in the United States. And you know what, CCV, one of the goals of 92.9 really is to bump up the coverage of soccer here. Because Atlanta United, as we saw yesterday, 55,000 strong at Bobby Dodd. This is a big deal to the city of Atlanta. You heard the crowd yesterday. You saw how in unison they were rising and falling with every single moment through 90 minutes. It was an amazing atmosphere, and it's a huge deal for the city.
You know, and being a guy, especially I'm not from here, you know, I moved here 4 years ago from California, and you'd always hear that stigma about Atlanta sports. They're not a sports town. It's just fans don't show up. Well, obviously, fans hurt them last night because they came out 55,000 strong. It was an amazing atmosphere. Unbelievable. I mean, the ticket lines were long. Just to get your tickets at Will Call was an extra hour. You had to get there early. The tailgating was amazing. It reminded you of a college football game, that kind of that atmosphere that you saw there. And it was really amazing, a really good thing to see. And I was excited for the city. And I thought the guys went out there and put on a great performance for the city.
Before we get too deep into analyzing the game, talking about the atmosphere, the history behind it, I want to tell you, again, the podcast is called Off the Woodwork. We'll have this out to you kind of the day after or 2 days after the match. We'll kind of strike while the iron is hot every week and talk about not only what's behind, but what's ahead. You can follow the station on Twitter at 929TheGame. You can follow myself on Twitter at HereKyleTate. And you can follow CCV at Craig C. Valentino. Also, Jason Longshore is doing some writing now. I don't know if you listened to the broadcast. If you did, here on 92.9 The Game, we'll have all of Atlanta United's matches this season right here for you. But Jason Longshore is the color commentator. Adam Schick, who will hear his first goal highlight here momentarily. But Adam Schick is the play-by-play guy. Longshore and Schick are both going to be contributing to the website, 929thegame.com. So keep an eye out for that. I know that Jason Longshore has locked into at least three pieces a week. He's going to be kind of breaking down what happened over the weekend on Monday and then on Wednesday, sort of analysis of not only United, but the MLS. And then on Friday, previewing what's upcoming.
So he got one of our shifts. They got him all over the place. So I'd be excited because I'm excited about we have. That's one of the great things about 92.9 The Game, not only with the signal and everything we have here, we have a lot of people that are passionate about soccer here. So to be able to have the play by play along with the color commentators and then us and then other guys doing sports updates, Knox helping us put everything online for you guys to be able to listen to and follow along and tweet with us as it all goes down. It's a lot of fun being here at this, you know, inaugural moment for soccer, especially here, you know, for 92.9 The Game, and to be part of the, you know, be the flagship home for Atlanta United.
And myself and John Fricke got an opportunity to see firsthand through the entire afternoon from about 1 or 2 o'clock outside Bobby Dodd Stadium, where it's vendors going up and down Bobby Dodd Way, setting up their trucks and tents and what have you, all the way to right up to kick, where it is absolutely packed with people trying to stuff their way in a sellout crowd into that stadium.
Oh, yeah. I was one of those geniuses that decided to come like an hour before kickoff.
And you broke the rules,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah. It's so many rules. People will learn that about me. Craig, rules, not so much.
We're going to talk about this. CCV gets to the game. He picks up his credential. And he just decides.
Which I didn't even know if I'd have one because it was amazing job by the Atlanta United people because it was so much media. Everybody wanted to be part of this whole thing. And so I didn't know if I'd have a credential there, if I need to just go get my own ticket or, you know, call one of the guys in promotions like, hey, you know, can I carry a bag in or something just to get me into the stadium? They end up having a press pass there for me. And then in Craig fashion, I decided to walk into the stadium because I didn't know kind of if they had a sectioned off area for media or, you know, where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be upstairs. You're supposed to be on the field. So as I'm walking in, I see everybody coming in and the team's walking out and Monica's getting ready to do the national anthem and young Jock's getting ready to hit the golden spike and all these different things are going on. So I'm kind of like in the middle of this and I don't know where to go. So I have this deer in headlights look and I'm trying to, you know, because they'll always ask you if you pretend like you don't know where you're going, they're going to ask you what are you doing.
Right.
But if you fake it till you make it, there you go. So I just walk out onto the field. So I'm standing over there in the far far right corner, right by the flag, just kind of posted there like I belong there. And I end up being there for about 90 minutes until someone realized, hey, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, it's a 91st minute now. I don't really care. I'm good.
And at Bobby Dodd, it's not a stadium that's designed for soccer, obviously. It's very, very tight along the sidelines. So
yes.
It's not like we're – if you watch a Georgia Tech football game there, there are plenty of media and photographers and everything else on the sideline, obviously room for both teams. At Bobby Dodd, there's barely room for both teams.
No way.
On the right side when you walk in. So it was only supposed to be specially credentialed photographers down there, but also
and
CCV.
And Craig Carlos Valentino.
CCV and his 92.9 The Game
made
polo.
The special guest appearance. And so, yeah, and I'm sitting there. And
nobody asked you any questions.
Not one bit. Actually, you know, the funny part is a lot of people, and I didn't realize how many our fans listen to 92.9 The Game here, listen to our morning shows, listen to our, you know, Dukes and Bell and Zeno, and how so many people just listen to the show because I'm wearing my, you know, polo. It's like, hey, you're with 92.9 The Game? Oh, yeah, I've heard of you. You sub sometimes on the morning show, or you're on a Fricky show, or you're on a Dukes and Bell, and I'm like, yeah, you know, a lot of times, and they even knew my nickname as, you know, Blaxican, so they were all making the jokes, and it was a lot of fun, and it was really cool to be out there to see all these people, and to see that not only are these guys, you know, we always think of 1990 game, and our callers are calling in talking about Falcons, talking about Georgia football, but 55,000 people there were also fans of the station, so you know that they only don't listen to football, they listen to soccer as well, and they're passionate about it as well, so that was cool to see that we, you know, as a station, encompass all that.
It was a special moment for the city of Atlanta, for the city's history, to finally get after a probably 6 or 7 year battle since the initial petition went out for an MLS team to 2014 when they made the announcement, now almost a full 3 years later, the first match. It was an amazing atmosphere, and Greg Garza talked to the media after the game. He was talking about how Atlanta United had an opportunity in about the 67th minute. Miguel Almiron had an opportunity up the field with Joseph Martinez flanking him on the left, and he chipped it. And an amazing save by Robles for New York Red Bulls is the only reason that United didn't go up 2-0. Here's Garza with what would have happened with the atmosphere had he made that.
If Miguel would have been able to chip the goalie on a second goal, I think that would have brought the house down. So, you know, I think that the support is there. You guys, Atlanta, I was expecting, to be honest, a lot less. But they have definitely surprised us with how many people are that are on board. You can hear everyone the whole entire game, and it's kind of hard to talk to your teammates on the field. That's how loud it was.
He's 100% right. I mean, me be standing down there and where I shouldn't have been standing, but standing in the middle of all the chaos, you could see fans as he had that breakaway wanting to run on the field. Like they had just won, beat Duke, and everybody's rushing the court. Like if he'd have made that, I mean, it wouldn't have been only fireworks at the beginning of the game. It would have blown up, and the whole city would have just lost it. So it was like all that collective groan from everybody. I was like, man, that was the moment. Because you know, especially the way soccer's set up, if you can go up 2-0 on someone, that's almost putting the nail in the coffin on somebody.
Yeah, especially that late. By the way, the attendance for this game, it was the fourth largest for a soccer game in the world weekend.
World.
55,200 some. I know Manchester United had a bigger one.
Well, they see 78,000.
Right. Barcelona's match was a bigger one.
Camp Nou's pretty big, too.
Yeah. I can't remember the other one. I think it was in Germany.
But I've heard that Atlanta fans don't like sport. They don't show up. That's what I've always heard. Atlanta fans don't show up. So I
buena
guess.
Suerte.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Exactly. So Atlanta fans came strong. And I was excited and proud to be part of something like that.
Well, with this team, the way it was constructed, you hoped that they would score in a hurry out of the gate. And, you know, the first 10, 15, 20 minutes roll by, it didn't really seem like the team had it all together yet. It took, you know, about 15 to 20 minutes for them to get their chemistry together. But once they started attacking, it was a relentless attack, and an absolutely beautiful cross from Tyrone Mears set up the first goal in United history.
Carmona switches it. Dangerous ball. Flip back post it in! The first goal in Atlanta United history is in the back of the net in the 25th minute.
That was Adam Schick on the call on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It was Tyrone Mears across that actually looked like it was targeted for Greg Garza.
Yeah.
Surprising to see the fullback all the way up into the box in an attacking position. But Yamil Assad snuck in on the back post and ended up booting it home. It was an incredible finish, and what a way to score the first goal. To go up 1-0 on a team that won the Eastern Conference last year.
Yeah, think about that. It's a team, it's an expansion team you're not really expecting a lot out of. We'll see. They got a lot of promise, but you don't know what you're going to get. And with the way they were able to run their offense, especially in the first 45, was amazing. It was constant movement, constant pressure. It just seemed like a wave after wave after wave was going towards the goal, and it was just only a matter of time. And like you said, a beautiful cross ends up setting up Assad for a goal right there on the back post, and me being at the wrong place. I was standing right there when it happened. He comes sliding towards me, and I'm like, this is so beyond cool. Like,
and your phone was dead.
Safely, my cell phone dies right, like maybe right 3 minutes before that. So, of course, there's no place for me to plug in my phone to charge, and that happens. And I'm just like, well, at least I'll be able to tell my grandkids that, you know, hey, I was there. I saw it. Assad came sliding right towards me. I could have gave him a high five. That's how close it was. But it was just amazing to see the fans, the goody mob, everybody all just going, everybody losing their mind at that moment was an amazing feeling that you know, can never be taken away.
Did you just call them the goody mob instead of the footy mob?
Yeah, because that's I'm really about that goody mob. I love how they do tie that in with the footy mob. I think that's awesome. That's why we had to have the intro. There you go.
Well, how much of this do you think with New York Red Bulls? They changed formations. They came out in a 4-2-2-2, something that they're trying to go back to. They started last year. It was ugly. They went back to the 4-1-3-2 and were dominant from that point. How much of it early do you think was Red Bulls kind of trying to find their form in this odd and not really well-known formation in the States? It's more of a Brazilian formation.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that's one thing. And also, you don't know what you're getting from the other side as well. It's not real much game tape out there when you're playing another team. So especially an expansion team. So you're like, you kind of see some things. You don't really see a lot when it comes to actual preseason games and, you know, these really friendlies are getting warmed up. These kids have only been playing together for like 8 weeks. So it's kind of hard to really know what they're going to go. So I think there was a lot of feeling out when it came to the New York side when it came down to this matchup. And I think that's where we saw the bigger difference in the second half, which we'll get to a little bit later, when they finally saw, okay, look, this is what they're trying to do to us. This is how they're spreading us out. This is how they're being able to tackle us. And they made some different adjustments. But I thought at the end of the day, like I said, our first half, the adjustments we came out with and the game plan that we had was perfect. And I thought our back line played beautifully in the first half. A lot of communication, was definitely feeding the ball out back out to the outside so we can push the ball back up. At the end of the day, that's the one thing you always find out about soccer. It's one of the frustrating things is if you have a team down, you don't want to let them get back up. And I think we had time and time again. I want to say it was like in the 44th minute, right before halftime. I had a great cross from Garza. We had sending cross after cross. This one was to Martinez, and again, Robles makes an amazing save to just deny us right before halftime to push us up 2-0. So that could have really been being up 2-0 going into halftime. You know. That's a difference in a half. Now you got to bring in subs earlier. You got to make a whole bunch of different adjustments, and now you're chasing that first and second goal.
A lot of chances. United was peppering the goal in the first half, and for New York Red Bulls, they only had two shots. Neither of them was on goal in the first half, so they really couldn't find their way offensively. United dominated for the next 50 minutes, and then things changed. There was a moment in the 67th minute that I alluded to earlier. Miguel Almiron had an opportunity at a chip. They had a turnover. They get on the run. And in my mind, we went back and watched the highlight a couple of times before we came on for the show, this podcast.
Still screaming.
And Joseph Martinez is streaking up the left side with him, but Martinez is never onside.
Never.
So Almiron only has one option, and that's to try to chip it over Robles.
Yes.
Robles made an amazing save, and it's so easy to play
devil's advocate of what you should have done.
Monday morning striker here. But You'd love to go back and have that opportunity again, you know, make one juke right and boot it past him, or have Martinez get back on side. Give you the option, have him streak behind you and kind of screen off the defender. This was kind of the turning point in the game, though, when Robles made that amazing save.
That's exactly what happened. I think that at the end of the day, it's like that's the one that if you ask United, that's the one they felt they got away. A lot of them, they had a really good chance earlier, but that was the one. When you have a 2-on-0 against a keeper, I mean, that's 99 out of 100 going in the back of the net, so to not be able to put that in. And I thought he made the right decision trying to chip, because when you saw, we went back and watched it a couple times, the defender was coming back strong on him, so if he had touched, he took one more touch, the defender would have been able to poke it away. So I think that when it came down to it, he made the right decision trying to go for the chip. It's just, at the end of the day, I think Lou Holtz said it best. Those guys are going on a scholarship too. You got to tip your cap to a keeper who made an amazing play.
And post-game, Tata Martino was asked about the second half, and basically it was a simple question. What happened? And Martino came back and he said, honestly, the question could be what happened in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't the full second half. United came out of the gate just as hot as they were at the end of the first half. And it really was the turning point. We'll get into that more. We'll get into what went wrong for United in this 2-1 loss later on. I want to get into, though, a bit of talk about the supporters, the fans at this game, because we talked about what an amazing night it was. Packed out crowd, 55,000 strong. And one thing that a lot of people who may be new to the game of soccer might not know is it takes a lot to get a crowd that big on the same page.
Yes.
They have these things called supporters groups, and Terminus Legion is one of those. They also have Footy Mob, they have Resurgence, and they have, what's the other one, The Faction?
The Faction.
And these four groups have been around for a couple of years now, and their whole goal is to design an atmosphere around Atlanta United Soccer, where they are teaching teaching chants, leading the way in these chants, and they want an entire stadium full of people who are on the same page. Well, we had an opportunity to chat with Matt Stegall of Terminus Legion. He was one of the founders. He was actually one of the original ones back in 2011 who started the petition to bring MLS soccer to Atlanta. And that kind of evolved into Terminus Legion, what we know it as. So had a chance to chat with him. Here's that interview from earlier today. Here on this inaugural episode of Off the Woodwork from 92.9 The Game, pleased to welcome one of the board members of Terminus Legion. He is Matt Stegall. And Terminus Legion, if you're not familiar, is a supporters group for the brand new Atlanta United, who, of course, had their inaugural match yesterday. First off, Matt, welcome to the program. Last night's atmosphere, it was kind of the first try for the city of Atlanta at big-time, top-flight soccer culture. What did you think of not only how the match turned out, but how the crowd turned out last night at Bobby Dodd Stadium?
Well, first off, how the match turned out, although we're happy to, you know, like, finally have a team and everything, you know, it was a pretty big disappointment. We did jump ahead to a lead 1-0, you know, great goal. We were ahead and it just looked like the team kind of, ran out of gas, after missing a few chances there at the end. And, you know, a lot of people are just happy to have a game or, you know, happy to have a team, but, you know, it would have been much happier if we had started off with the win. But as far as the crowd, you know, I was telling some people that the supporter section was 55,000 strong last night. You had the entire stadium as a sold out stadium under the lights of the city. And everybody was standing from first kick till the end of the whistle. Chants were going all around the stadium. I mean, I've been to a lot of Atlanta sporting events, playoff games for the Falcons, things like that. I haven't seen a fan base standing for a full, you know, hour and a half, hour, 45 minutes. Like what was happening last night. It was just electric and, you know, it was beyond everyone's expectations. It was beautiful.
Well, tell me for the elementary soccer fan, because there are a lot of new fans in the Atlanta area who maybe have only watched the World Cup every 4 years or haven't paid that close of attention. What's the purpose of a supporters group? What's the mission of something like Terminus Legion?
So I think that when it comes to a supporters group, the ultimate goal is to bring the most passionate fans of the team together. You know, you can definitely go to a game, sit down, watch the game, enjoy it. But when it comes to the supporters group and supporters, you know, you want to give it that little extra. You're standing up the, you know, the entire 90 minutes. You're jumping, you're chanting, you're trying to, you know, unite with all the other individuals in the supporters group into one big collective to try to give your team that advantage and that support that, you know, that helps them to win the match and helps them to victory. So, I mean, as you can tell right now, my voice, my whole body right now is kind of paying for the game yesterday. But, you know, that's kind of what we put into it. And that's our small part that we can do to try to, you know, to help this team that represents the city, not just for, you know, against everyone in the country, but there were eyes all over the world watching that game last night. And, you know, we all wanted to do our small part to try to show that, you know, we do support this team and you know, we want to win.
It was funny when I reached out to Terminus Legion to get somebody to come on the podcast and talk with us kind of about the supporters group culture. They had to do a little searching around because I'm not sure there were a whole lot of you guys left that had voices to talk on a podcast 24 hours after the fact.
Yeah, no, we're all pretty spent. You know, the tailgate started at 12 o'clock yesterday. It was free beer. We, you know, we were doing chants all the way, you know, through the tailgate, through the game, everything. And I just remember I sat down in my car on the way home, you know, after standing up for about 11 hours straight, jumping, all of that. And it took me 2 or 3 minutes to stand back up. I mean, I felt like I got ran over by a train. And, you know, it just wasn't me. It was, you know, all of my friends, everyone else in Terminus Legion, the other supporters groups, we're all, you know, we're all feeling it today. But you know what? It's worth it. It's the price we pay, and we kind of wear it as a, you know, as a little badge of honor. So.
And now you've got about 2 weeks to rest until Chicago Fire come into town. Tell me the history of Terminus Legion. How did this whole group come to a start?
So Terminus Legion was founded in the early part of 2014, right around January. And it was kind of the offspring of the ATL Once MLS petition movement. So that started back in 2011 with literally, it was just a petition and a website where people could sign up to show their support. And for however many people we stood up and asked for a petition, a signature for support or an email address, we were laughed at saying that it would never work. So, but eventually, you know, after 3-4 years of literally just going to every event, whether it's a soccer event, beer festival, you know, we're looking to connect with anyone and everyone. You know, finally the, you know, Arthur Blank's foundation reached out to us and, you know, and just kind of gave us the little, hint that, hey, guess what? You know, the team might be coming anytime soon. So, you know, you might want to take that petition to the next step. So, we took the, you know, that little hint and created Terminus Legion. Just that way it kind of, I had all these emails and all these petition signatures. I reached out to those people and was like, you know, hey, it's time to start the supporters group now. So we did that. And, you know, and ever since then we've been growing and, we are now over 800 members. So, and it's, we don't see it into the growth in sight. Really, you know, it's just everyone right now, a lot of people are asking about us, checking out our website, looking at memberships, looking at how to join. And there's just a lot of people out there who are either like, you know, they're just crying out for a team to support, or they're new to the game and they just love what they're seeing. And, they're interested in being a part of it.
He is Matt Stegall of Terminus Legion here on Off the Woodwork from 92.9 The Game. And since then, there have been three other supporters groups that have come up. You have the Faction, you have Footy Mob, and you have Resurgence. And each one is a little bit different in its mission, but they all kind of work together. Tell me how that works. How do the four groups work in unison to get Bobby Dodd as rocking as it was last night?
Yeah, so we all have our little differences here and there and different ways that we approach things. But in the end, we all have one goal, and that's to try to give Atlanta United and the players the support they need to be, you know, motivated towards victory. And, you know, so when we might have some differences here and there, but when it comes to supporting the team, we can definitely unite and work together to support the team.
Well, one big part, obviously, of soccer culture, and this may yesterday for a lot of people, I think, of the 55,000, it might have been the first time they heard the word TIFO. Explain to me what the TIFO is and how the idea that of the Phoenix and Unite and Conquer came about between the four groups.
So, a TIFO is basically just a artistic display of support that is usually unveiled at the very beginning of a game that is the blood, sweat, and tears of the supporters showing their support. And usually you'll see a lot of team, you know, a lot of supporters try to be pretty clever. Sometimes it's trash talk. Sometimes it's just showing support for the team. But it's really just hundreds of hours go in to building that. And it's really only revealed for about 30 seconds to a minute. And it's just it's a sign of support that, you know, look, as supporters, we're willing to pour in all of these hours and all of this time and to show this this sign of love and sign of support. And and the supporters groups came together and worked on the design. They met up in a warehouse, sewed all the fabric together, painted it, went through rehearsals, and then when the time came right after the national anthem, we coordinated the reveal of it and showed it to the world. And it lasted for no more than a minute, and then now at this point it will never be shown again, and that's just the process. And then the next time we'll look to do the next one, and then the next one, and it's a repeating process that we just do over and over.
It was obviously a big surprise what was going to be on that first TIFO. How difficult was it with, I mean, you mentioned 800 different members. I'm sure all of them weren't involved on it, but how difficult was it to keep it from leaking that it was going to be the Phoenix?
Most of our members and the members of all the other supporters groups, we're well aware of kind of the traditions. And if they weren't, you know, if somebody was taking a photo, they were just, you know, reminded, look, you know, feel free, you're putting the time in, you can take photos. But the one rule is this is kind of a secret until it's revealed. And, you know, we just, all of this work, everyone's putting their hours into it. Let's not ruin it by having it revealed before it gets, before it's supposed to. And, I think everyone involved who's willing to put in that time, they know how much it means and how important it is to keep it a secret.
So where does the TIFO go now?
It's just, you know, it's usually stored. Some supporters groups do different things with it. We still, you know, don't really know what might happen with this one, but I'm sure it'll be kept in storage and kept in, you know, used as a, you know, just kind of a trophy in the future as a, you know, as a sign of that was the first TIFO that we did. And therefore, you know, that's just, it'll always be something special.
He is Matt Stegall of Terminus Legion here on Off the Woodwork. Let's talk a bit about the chants and how you create this chanting and song culture that you see play so well into international football. How has the chant writing gone so far? What difficulties have you guys come across in creating these chants for a brand new team?
So I think one of the biggest difficulties in getting the chants going right now is just everyone to learn and know them. You know, so Terminus Legion has been growing, Resurgence has been growing, all the supporters groups have been growing. But even then, as far as the first game, that supporter section was probably 4,000 or 5,000 strong. And so we've had a lot of active members up to this point. But, and, you know, we've done, you know, a lot of chants at the preseason games and other events before that. But really, a lot of the people that were at that game last night just haven't really been exposed to the chants that often. So that's why you saw some of the best ones were ones that were, you know, just the A-T-L clap, A-T-L clap, just because everyone knows that. There's no really words or lyrics to know. It's going to take some time until people know some of the more involved chants. So, you know, so that's just going to be a process. We're going to do our best to educate everyone, work with the other supporters groups. That way we learn theirs, they learn ours. And as each game goes by, you'll just see more and more chance being added to the list as far as the chance that we use to support the team.
Is there a team? I know that the Seattle Sounders, Portland Timbers, Orlando City has had a nice kind of fledgling culture grow up around it. Is there a team that Atlanta United is trying to sort of model their supporters group culture after?
Not, you know, so we have European influences, we have South American influences. We've of course seen what other MLS teams have done. And I think really what's really cool is Atlanta's got such a unique culture that, you know, our goal is to try to have a lot of original Atlanta only chants. And, you know, so once you have that mix of all those different influences, I think we can be pretty unique to a lot of the other teams that are out there. And, you know, we're just going to kind of be to, you know, go to our own tune and just see, what comes out of it. But, you know, the other night was just well beyond our expectations. And when it comes to the chance, when it comes to what we're doing, anything that can just spread and be used to support the team is something that we're just going to keep using.
Okay, he is Matt Stegall of Terminus Legion here on Off the Woodwork. Thanks so much for the time. And, hey, if we can help at all in spreading the word about your next round of chance when Chicago Fire comes to town, let us know.
All right, sounds good. Sounds good. We'll reach out to you.
Sounds good. All right. That's Matt Stegall, Terminus Legion, talking about supporters group culture.
So great chatting with Matt Stegall of Terminus Legion. Some really, really great stuff there. It really is. It's so difficult to build a culture for a brand new team. And you look at the Portland Timbers, you look at Orlando City, you look at even Minnesota United. These recent expansion teams are teams that had culture beforehand because they were playing at a lower tier. Atlanta United was made out of the dust.
Yeah.
And so what's going to happen over these next couple of weeks, months, even after a couple of seasons or generations of fans, you're going to see this culture start to evolve and grow up and mature. Right now, we don't really know where that is, but a lot of stuff is going to come organically with this team, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch and to follow.
I think you're right, and I think where that comes from is, well, you have to look at the city itself. I think the city of Atlanta, and that's why it's so frustrating when they get this rap about their fans. You can't create that culture if your fans aren't passionate. If you don't have people that are passionate about soccer, people that want to learn about it, people that want to be involved. I mean, that's the great thing about when you have like four support groups like this. They allow you to join something that's bigger than you, something that gives you some pride on your city, something you can, you know, you can wear the swag, you can wear, you know, when you go to stadiums and you see the people wearing scarves and signs, you're like, where'd you get that from? Usually that's probably a supporter group that said, hey, this is where you can get this swag at. You come, this, our tailgate's back here, section 102, you know, it's like to be part of something like that. And I think that the way they're setting this up is brilliant because everybody likes being a part, especially here in the South. Everybody likes being a part of something. You see everyone's license plate has the, you know, a Kentucky this, a University of Georgia this, like where they went to school. We all like being part of different things that we're proud of. And so to be able to be on the ground level of something like this. A lot of people love soccer, want to be part of something like this. And so that's why I think this is really taking on a life of its own, because there is a lot of pride in the city, especially when it comes to their sports.
Kyle Tate with Craig Carlos Valentino alongside here on the inaugural episode of Off the Woodwork. Here in the first week after an Atlanta United match. Boy, it's good to say that after a long, long wait.
Man,
like that.
We've been waiting to say that.
Just to say something that simple. But I think with these teams, Atlanta United the whole time, they've tried to say that the culture is going to be organic. It's going to develop and evolve over time. But they tried to add in a piece of their own culture. They tried to start a tradition from day one, and they called it the Golden Spike. You saw this Golden Spike walk right by you in the tunnel.
I shouldn't have, but yes, I was standing in the tunnel, and all of a sudden, I see, you know, 5-6 guys carrying this thing out. It looks like a battling ram, and I'm like asking security, hey, like, what's going on? They go, oh, you got to wait on 1 second. I'm like, okay, and I'm just kind of trying to figure out what's going on. So, of course, you know, me being who I am, I just, you know, aimlessly follow these guys out to the field, and I see, and all of a sudden, then I see young Jock sitting there with his own sledgehammer, and I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool. Like, and the crowd's excited. Everybody's excited. It's cool to have your own thing, your own little niche, your own, you know, when I think of different sports that have their own thing, I think of Seattle, the Seahawks, they have their 12 flag. Right. I think the Raiders have their cauldron when they turn the fire on. To have, and even the Carolina Panthers up here have their drum they beat on.
I think of college football where Florida State, you throw the flaming spear
down. Exactly. Like those things where you know, like it's about to go down. It's about to get real. And so it's like to be able to have our own thing like that is a really cool thing, and especially to be able to roll it out right there, week one, match one. I think that was actually really cool.
One of my favorite things in MLS is what Portland does with the cutting of the log. I don't know what they call the tradition, but it's fantastic. Guy with a chainsaw just lops off a part of a log. It's fantastic.
This reminds you of those like ESPN late night, you know, those big Master Gunderson things where they would chop logs and stuff. Like, that is pretty cool, bro. So yeah, and especially being a guy who went to school up in the Pacific Northwest, that is so Portland right there.
Of course, the significance of the Golden Spike, the city is well known as kind of a hub. Now it's an airport hub.
Yeah.
But back in the day when Atlanta was founded, it was founded on railroads, and it was kind of the terminus, the end of all railroad lines, and it's where they all shot out. And so the Golden Spike is going into a
rail.
See,
you could have helped me a couple weeks ago when I was watching Walking Dead, didn't know what terminus meant. There's your history right there.
Yeah,
now
absolutely.
I'm caught up.
They took that from the city of Atlanta. Of course, Walking Dead, a lot of that is filmed here in the Atlanta area. I love, too, talking about the history of the city, I loved the first TIFO, the Phoenix rising out of the ashes. And the city of Atlanta has always been known for the bird, the Phoenix, because when Sherman marched to the sea at the end of the Civil War, he burned it down. He raised the whole thing, and then it was raised in a different way.
Yeah.
And so it rose from the ashes, much like the Phoenix. I absolutely loved the TIFO, and I love that tradition.
You know, it's funny when it said, because me and you had been talking off the air about, you know, the whole Phoenix, and we needed like kind of a mascot sort of thing. And when I saw that, I thought of you, because I was like, you know, you'd been calling that would be the perfect thing. And it's
I loved it. It gave me chills.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, is someone listening to Kyle Tate out there on Twitter? Because when that popped out, I was like, that was well played. I was like, man, folks are out there listening to you. You're starting a movement, man.
I suggested it on Twitter, and I put it on Reddit, too, and it got downvoted like crazy.
Well,
people hated it.
Usually when you post on Twitter, things happen, though.
But yeah, that's what I hear, apparently. But the difference was, you know, people thought that I was suggesting a rebrand of the team, and that wasn't the case at all. They thought that I was suggesting they change the name from Atlanta United to Atlanta Phoenix.
Like, No.
Think about the way European teams have it. I mean, Chelsea is the Blues.
Yeah.
Man U is the Red Devils.
Yep.
Liverpool's the Reds. And they don't all have to do with colors either. West Brom is the Baggies.
Yep.
Tottenham is Spurs. I mean, they all have nicknames. Here, the team you're about to play on Sunday, Minnesota United, is the Loons.
The Loons.
So to
Which
me,
could be a California team. I thought they were crazy. You know, just the Loons.
So that's what I was thinking is, yeah, you can call it Atlanta United. I love the name, and I love that it's a tip of the cap to so many European teams who have put the United at the end of their name. But and I love the United and Conquer, too. I mean, I think that's a great slogan. But to have another nickname, to have another way to refer to the team where you say that team and you immediately know the Phoenix, it's Atlanta United. Now, the problem is you could run into issues down the road because the city of Phoenix is in the running to be one of the MLS's expansion teams.
Jason, that's probably the people that were tweeting you that were kind of shooting you down.
But yeah.
Because I thought it was a brilliant idea.
So they were saying, shut up, Kyle Tate. You don't know anything.
Kyle, in 2 years, we're going to have to change it again to a different bird, bro. So I understand exactly where you come from. But I think that, like you said, it's just really cool to have. And that's like I said, it just goes back to the thing I've been talking about all day. It goes back when you have a city that's passionate about things like this, you can create all these ideas. You can get everybody on board. You can kind of get brainstorm and find what's the best way of all of us can move forward when you have something like this, and when you have a city that's behind a team, that's excited about a team, that's you know, was at that 25th minute, the place was going to explode. It's like you can't do that if you don't have those kind of fans here. And that's the one great thing we have here in Atlanta is fans that's excited about this team.
And what we saw on Sunday, we saw a very young but I think educated crowd in terms of soccer. Your chants were very simple. It was, you know, ATL.
Oh, I thought you meant chants to the ref. Those were a lot simpler, too.
Well,
the
ones they were chanting towards the ref. That was pretty simple as well. But
definitely had some chants.
But the chants were simple, but they were all on the same page. And as this grows up, you're going to hear the songs and the chants get longer and longer and more complex because the audience is going to get more educated on what these supporters groups are trying to do.
Exactly.
I loved the chant card that they handed out at this first game.
I think it's brilliant.
Game.
Like, brilliant to get everybody on board. Like, hey,
especially
this is
the Andrew Carlton. He's one of our own.
I think that I can't wait to hear that. I can see it now. I'm calling now. It will be you will come in the 85th minute of a game, be a super sub moment, and that's when everybody will finally learn that song because I think this kid is destined for greatness on this team.
Get Frosted Orange into a game, please.
Please, yes.
Please.
Frosted Orange. I'm loving that.
We knew the 16-year-old wasn't going to come in the opener. But
it would have been cool, though.
It would have been cool.
It'll happen. I understand what they were saying, but me and you were talking about this off air. I'm like, I understand what coach was trying to do. I understand Tata had, you know, different guys. And like, hey, it's the first game. I want some guys out there that I know what they can do. And you don't really know what's going to happen when you put a 16-year-old out there on the field. I mean, but at the end of the day, if he could have came out on that field, especially when it was 1-1, if he could have came on the field, that place would have lost it. They would have lost it. The other 30,000 still outside trying to get in would have tried to find a way in.
That's how
crazy it would have been.
No doubt. Well, it's Off the Woodwork, the brand new soccer podcast from 92.9 The Game. We'll have this on a weekly basis. I'm Kyle Tate. He's Craig Carlos Valentino. Let's get back into how this team is built. What we saw for the first really 75 minutes in this thing, how well CCV did they run Tata's offense? He runs a pressing 4-3-3, or really more of, it was kind of a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
Really exactly what Red Bulls ran in their long success last year in their 16 straight without losing a match. But how well did they run Tata's offense during that stretch, and how much did it fall apart late in the game?
I think the offensive part always looked really good. I mean, you have times where first touches were bad or whatnot, but at the end of the day, they had options. You always saw them controlling the middle of the field and getting out, always in an attacking mode. I liked that a lot. You would see them steal away a ball, and all of a sudden, they're looking towards their outlets to push the ball up the field. And so I think they're going to get better with it. It's kind of like to people who haven't really watched a lot of soccer, I would say if you watched the Atlanta Falcons this year, you saw how that defense kind of evolved week after week with communication and be able to talk and know what everybody's doing and how it just got better each week and they were able to shut down offenses. That's what you're going to see from a team like this. We took a lot of shots, but not a lot of more shots on goals. So you're going to see the shots on goals increase a lot more because we're able to establish possession more and be able to push the ball up a lot more. So you're going to see a lot of options, you know, for guys out there, for Assad out there, for Martinez out there, for Amidon. You know, you're going to see all these guys are going to get a lot more chances because at the end of the day, they're learning now how the concepts all work. And I guess that's the end of the day is when you're young kids, it's, oh, coach wants us to do this because of this, or he has me push out why. Why does he have me push out why? Oh, it's because of this, and being able to see these things. And I think you'll see that from week to week as being a fan, you'll really start to see these guys grow into that offense.
Right now, they're pausing to think about it.
Yes.
And in a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, you'll hit that point where they don't have to stop and think anymore.
Yeah.
They just do it because it's natural.
It's
to
reflex.
Them.
It's reflex at that point. And that's the good thing about when you don't have to think about it, when you can just go out there and play like it's high school ball, like you're out there in the yard with your friends, it's a whole lot easier. You're allowing your talent to take over. And I think that's the one great thing. These kids showing they got the hunger and talent and speed to go out there and play. It's just now once you put that into a formation and know what everybody's trying to do and know where your help is, when you start to get tired and you start to, hey, you got that guy or you got that guy? Oh, that's my guy? When you know what the formation is, you know you don't have to ask questions anymore. You don't have to look back and be like, who's supposed to be marking this guy? And all of a sudden you look up and you see, and that's the one problem we're going to have going forward is, and we saw it a lot, me and you talked about it too as well, when it comes to our height, we have a lot of speed in this team, but not a lot of height. So when it comes to set pieces, corners, free kicks, all these things, that's why we don't send the ball a lot. People wonder, why doesn't our goalie kick the ball down a lot of times?
Right.
Because we don't have height to win these balls. So we like to work the ball up and get the ball into the offense rather than shooting it down there and trying to win the ball in the air.
I saw a lot of questions about that on Twitter last night. Why so many short corners?
Yeah.
That's why.
That's why. You just don't have those 6'5 guys that can go out there
Your
and just
height
win
is on the bench in Kenwyn Jones last night until late. So.
And then you bring him in late because you're hoping that maybe you can get some kind of a penalty, you know, we can get some kind of a set piece so you can get him a shot at it, but that's the problem you're going to run into. It's either that's the style we play. We're going to play fast. We're going to be out and moving. But we got a lot of short guys. So when it comes to set pieces, everybody's got to mark their guy and got to know where their guy is. Or you have a wide open guy coming in to get a header in to get a goal.
And I think you're going to see two different styles of attack. That's the beauty of how this United team is built. You have Joseph Martinez, who's lightning quick. You have Hector Villalba, who's lightning quick. I think those are two of the fastest guys in MLS this season, and really in the world, for that matter. But Kenwin Jones brings the height. He brings the win headers in the box and get down and win
muscle.
Those set pieces.
That muscle.
The muscle, yeah. So between those two, Tata Martino has two different types of weapon that depending on what team they're playing and what the back line looks like, you can interchange those in the starting lineup.
Yeah, or also you think about not only that, but then also as you're playing with guys like that, you know what, if I played with you long enough, now I know what you're good at. I know that Martinez, I can send him the ball, he's going to go out and beat somebody for it. If I know that, you know, that at the end of the day, Kenwin Jones is in, then I'm going to have to bring the ball out up the wings and send it across and let him go do his thing in the box. So once you play with somebody enough, you kind of know what everyone's strengths are, what you can do, what you're better at, if you're better on your left, better on your right. And so I think this team will learn that, especially when it comes to the final third, and be able to finish a lot better in that final third and put more goals. You know, put that ball in the goal a lot more once you realize, hey, this is what we need to do moving forward.
And I put it into layman's terms this week for the typical NFL fan here in Atlanta, where Julio Jones, when he was a rookie, Matt Ryan didn't have that connection with him. But now, when Julio Jones is cutting back on a curl route, Ryan knows exactly when he's about to cut and throws it before he ever cuts.
All they have to do is look at each other.
And so Julio Jones turns around, the ball is 2 feet in front of him and ready to be caught.
Yeah, and can kind of pivot back what you were talking about earlier. If Martinez and him had played enough, it's like Martinez would know to come back, bro. Right. I can get you this ball, we can get this goal rather than me have to go for this chip. It's just when you play enough with someone, then at the end of the day, you can talk without talking. And like you said.
Well, we'll get back to how things kind of unraveled there late with the quick rapid fire two goals for New York Red Bulls. But coming in, we've talked so much in the opening 45 minutes or so of this podcast about the offense. We haven't really given any love to the defense. And I think this defense is a lot stronger than they're given credit for. I know Jason Longshore has said this is one of the best defenses that an expansion side has ever had in MLS. You're talking about an experienced guy in Michael Parkhurst, joined by Greg Garza, U.S. international player. Leandro Gonzalez Pires, who unfortunately got hurt on Sunday.
Leading to the goal.
Yeah, I hope he's okay for Sunday's match at Minnesota United. But Longshore has said that he's going to be the firecracker on the back line. He's going to be the guy who is the key to this entire defensive set. I think that they played, even though they had that six-minute lapse, where obviously Anton walks in his first game in MLS on loan from Tottenham.
Oh, man, dude, talk about bad breaks.
has the own goal. I mean, it's his second professional appearance ever. And
welcome to the show, bro.
Right.
Welcome to the show.
But other than that lapse of 6 or 7 minutes when those two quick goals came, I thought the defense played remarkably well, especially Greg Garza. I mean, he was up and down the field the whole game.
And that's the one cool thing about where I was standing on the side of the field. Since I was standing more towards our side, I got to see the defense perform a lot better. And you could see that back four was solid for that first 45 minutes. There was a couple of chances where you're like, okay, hey, you could see them look at each other like, hey, remember, that's me instead of you. And you could see them kind of, but they were working things out. And I think that was the one great thing you had them going was they were able to stop the attack in the middle. They were able to clean things up and get it back to their offense, get it back out there and let their guys up front do what they wanted to do. And so I thought their communication was well. Like I said, at the end, everybody gets tired. That's the one thing you're going to have to learn. These guys are going to have to learn to communicate a little bit better, especially with their keeper, of who's going to come forward, who's going to go back. When we got guys that are coming from the backside, we got to make sure that we are covering these guys up and not letting them get free runs at our back post. So those things are going to come with time and with communication as guys get better. Like I was saying earlier, we saw that with the Falcons. You're going to see that with this front, with this back four. But I think you're 100% right. I think this defense, we were led to believe that they would be the weak link, that, oh, man, we got to score 6 goals because these guys aren't going to be able to stop anybody. They looked really good out there for about a good 75 minutes. And, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, a couple mental lapses that hopefully you can just clean up. Look at some film and be like, hey, remember on this is what we're doing. And all of a sudden we can tweak a little bit here and then go forward and you get a lot more clean sheets.
Yeah, Tata Martino's whole philosophy is the best defense is a good offense, but he's got a heck of a defense too.
Yeah, exactly. He's not going to have bums back there. Like, they're trying to hold down the fort. It's like, no, you got some guys that can clear the ball, can mark their guys, and actually be able to get the ball back to the offense to be able to go score.
And I want to talk more about Greg Garza, because I don't know that I've ever seen a defender in the attack as much as Garza was. He was running from box to box the entire game. In fact, he was right smack in the middle of the penalty area when they scored their one and only goal, and it went right over his head. It was targeted for him off Tyrone Mears, but ended up getting to Yamil Assad right behind him. Garza was incredible, and that's one of the things Tata Martino likes to feature. He likes to feature a defender who can also get up and be a part of the attack when needed. He had some tremendous crosses and really set up a lot of the opportunities too.
And you think about that, and that's what makes it tough for a defense to cover. You're not expecting a guy in the back four to be pushing for goals.
Right.
So it's like, I'm like, okay, I expect these forwards, some of these attacking midfielders to be there, but a guy in the back, like, who's got this guy?
Right.
Like you said, it becomes a wave after wave after wave, and at the end of the day, if you keep pressing, the ball's going to go in. And like you saw it, he comes through, all of a sudden the defender's got a bite on him, and Assad's got the back post to himself. So I think he definitely needed a massage and some Gatorade and stuff after the game, because I know he definitely did a lot of miles in the game. But I thought the way he played the game was amazing, and you know, and I think that's what we need going forward, especially on the offensive side, is to be able to push the ball like that. Like I said, if we can communicate on the back end and say, "Hey, I'm going forward. I need you guys to cover my guys, so we don't have any leakouts coming back the other way." If we can limit those, then I love that attacking style defense.
So we talked here on Off the Woodwork early on about what went right for Atlanta United early. Now let's get into what went wrong late. And Garza gave his two keys in postgame to kind of how the game changed and what was the difference maker for Red Bulls.
I think we had an amazing first half. I would say two things. Finish our chances to finish off the game. That's one big lesson for us. And just stay compact and not concede those two goals so quickly. I think Red Bull high-pressed us in the second half, and we just need to stay a bit more compact just to keep more organized defensively. It's a disappointing result, but it's a long season.
So let's break that down a little bit. The two things that stand out to me, high press.
Yeah.
Basically, and the way that I saw it written on MLSsoccer.com today, and I'm going to steal it away right now, but Tata Martino basically got Tata Martino in the last 15 minutes.
They said, hey, what you do is pretty good. Let's do that too.
Anything you can do, I can do better. And they say in basketball, a pressing team hates to be pressed.
Yep.
It was the same kind of thing for United. That was when they were back on their heels and things kind of turned around.
And you saw, like I said, then they started coming wave after wave, and all of a sudden the lack of communication, the lack of these guys working together as a unit. That's the one thing. And you always see some of the great defenses. These guys have been playing together forever, so they don't even really have to talk to each other because they kind of know what to do. We don't have that yet here. So when you get pressed and you have guys coming in and all of a sudden a guy crosses your face and you're like, am I going with that guy? Or who's gonna have the guy behind me? You don't have that communication yet. And that's what led to a lot of these goals. Matter of fact, before that header, there should have been a goal before that. it should have actually got knocked in. But we ended up making a great save and knocking out and clearing out for a corner kick, which then led to the actual goal itself. But, I mean, Royer, he had actually had a chance to punch that ball in. And then all of a sudden it was a great save. Pushed out, but that's the problem you run into. And our keeper, he's even yelling about this. Like, guys, we got to talk. I got to know who's coming. If you got him, cool, let me know, because you can't have guys having free runs at your goal. And that's at the end of the day, that's frustrating for a goalkeeper. That's frustrating for a coach. You guys got to be able to communicate to know that you got this guy and I got this guy. And if he's coming, then you got to go. So at the end of the day, you can't be second-guessing yourself. I'd rather you commit and be wrong than second-guess yourself. And it seems there's a lot of second-guessing in that second half.
So Can dodges the two bullets, but then on the corner, Daniel Royer beats Julian Gressel in the air.
Which is an amazing header. Yeah, I mean, you got to tip your cap to him. He jumped up. There wasn't much you can do. You could probably fight him for the spot, but at the end of the day, once he crosses your face, you're just hoping he sails it over the bar, because with his height and his strength, him getting in the air like that, you have no chance. You're just hoping he sails it.
And we talked about the defense kind of being on their heels. Greg Garza talked about not staying compact.
Yeah.
It's something they need to do a little bit better. Very, very soon after that, you could see them start to get a little bit gassed there. They didn't make their substitutions until very late in the second half, and I think a little bit too late. But Anton walks the own goal. New York Red Bulls had a tremendous build-up to get to that point. A couple of very nice touches, no-look passes. I mean, it was...
An amazing back-heel pass that freed him up.
Absolutely gorgeous build, but it appeared... I watched it a couple of times, and so, of course, you can't expect the line judge to see it in real time.
If we look at it six times and don't
know. Yes. We looked at it six times and I thought, well, Bradley Wright Phillips might have been just a tiny little bit like a toenail offsides. But I think that it could have been handled a little better than by Anton Walks. And we talked about this a little bit off mic. Walks went with him instead of pulling up.
Yeah, pulling up and forcing him to go offside. And that's the one thing you can, and that comes with experience. And that's what you can't teach experience. When you're a 20-year-old kid, it's like, hey, do I let him go? Do I go with him?
He sees the guy streaking by him, so
he doesn't want his guy. Last thing I want is my guy scoring.
I just need to mark him.
Yeah, I'm like, as you see a guy going, you go. But at the end of the day, the way the line was set up perfectly, he's offsides if you let him go. And that pass comes a little bit late, and all of a sudden it's offsides, and we're good. But he went with him to keep him onside, and then compounded to make it worse. You knock it in yourself. Yeah. It's like, man, it's kind of like the double-edged sword there. So I understood why he went with him. But like I said, the only thing that comes with experience. The more you do it, the more you understand it, the more you understand what your keeper wants you to do, the more you understand what your teammates are doing, that comes along with it. So I know Parkhurst and him came up to him and hugged him and was like, hey, dude, we got your back. Don't worry about that. Pick your head up. Trust me. You'll rebound. It's a long season. You'll definitely rebound from that one moment. You won't be defined by that one moment.
He's a young kid. You hate to see him. I mean, he only played one game for Spurs.
Yeah.
And
literally gets on the field for a minute, and that happens.
Loaned
to
Atlanta United, and within seconds,
like
an own goal.
Like, thanks, coach. Thanks for putting me in here.
And there was people see own goal and they think that a guy just
kicks in his own net.
Just booted in his own net. That wasn't the case at all. If you go back and watch the replay, it went right between.
I thought
the
Phillips had the goal. Yeah. Until
it was
announced.
Originally credited.
Yeah, exactly. Until it was announced. I think when I left the stadium, and all of a sudden I went to end up hitting up Taco Mac on the way home, and they were like, "Oh, that own goal was horrible." And I was like, "Oh, they end up calling it an own goal." Yeah. I was like, for about 20 minutes after the game, I still thought it was a goal.
Yeah, so it went right between the kind of the sliding knees of BWP, and Walks was right behind him and ends up nicking it in. I mean, either one of them could have touched it at that point, just a luck of the draw or bad luck of the draw, I guess.
Yeah, especially for me being a Manchester United guy, growing up, and see a guy from Manchester City score, that's just kind of brutal to me. That made it even worse for me.
So that was 2-1. Then the red card, Carlos Carmona.
Jeez,
I assume
Louise.
That you saw the replay because there were still media members today, I mean on Monday, 24 hours later, who were saying that they didn't understand why Carmona got the red card. It was very, very subtle, but once you go back and watch the TV broadcast, you can see he spikes the guy on the ground.
Exactly. And I guess for me, I saw it right away because I've had shady guys play on my soccer teams. I've seen that move before.
That was
many
your
a
move,
time.
Wasn't it?
Exactly. Many a time, especially when you're frustrated. You're mad the referee's not giving any calls. You're mad the way this thing has just changed in the last 6 minutes. You had this team on the ropes. You were done. You should be up 3-0 here, and all of a sudden you're down a goal with 8 minutes to go. I understand the frustration, but at the end of the day, like you said, you're a 30-year-old guy on a young team.
This isn't a young kid.
Yeah, you got to be setting the example for these youngsters out there, because they're just as frustrated as you. You don't think Amadon is mad about that chip? You don't think he's thinking about that right now? Man, we wouldn't even be in this moment if I'd have knocked this ball in the back of the goal. So you got to be that experienced guy to say, you can't do that. I mean, I understand you're frustrated. I understand you're mad, but that's the one thing we learned about all sports now. There's cameras everywhere. Everybody's seen all these moves before. And the way soccer is, if you brush somebody anyway, they're going to pretend like they're shot anyway. So why would you try to cleat somebody and expect them not to roll around like you just stabbed them? Like, you just knew that was coming.
Yeah.
I know he's on the ground pretending he got a cramp and give him the magic spray to get up, and I understand all that, and I'm mad too. Stop stalling and get up, but you got to be smarter than that.
Yeah, it was unfortunately the right call. You know, I'm sitting there in the press box, and I didn't see the replay immediately. I didn't see it until later on Sunday night when somebody tweeted it at me, but yeah, it was the right call, giving him the red, and from that point, you're pretty much sunk.
Yeah, I saw that when I was like, yeah, I've seen many of my friends do that move. Like, yeah, that's a jerk face move, that one. I know that jerk face move, so yeah. So it was a frustrating move, and like I said, I definitely learned from it. I know Coach had something to say to him at the end of it, because at the end of the day, you're one of the leaders in this team. You're one of the experienced guys. You got to set the example for these young guys, and you can't be – in a game we're trying to get back in with 8 minutes to go – we can't do it with 10. Come on, man. I mean, you got to put the team first. What they say, the name on the front of the jersey is a lot more important than the name on the back. You got to think about the front of the jersey there.
And Tata Martino, to give you an idea of how few people actually understood what was going on, why he got a red card, Martino, in his postgame presser, said, "I wasn't given an explanation. I didn't see the play. I don't know what happened."
Yeah. Well, because most of us just saw the guy rolling around on the ground, stalling.
Sure.
And you're like, oh, here we go with this nonsense. Get him. I mean, because the crowd was already booing, because we all knew what it was time. It was 82nd minute, everybody starts cramping. Everybody's like, okay, we've seen this story before.
Milking the clock.
Yeah, get up, buddy, get up. And then, like you said, then it happens, and it's like, well, now if it was already hard with 11, it's definitely a lot harder with 10.
Well, to wrap up the analysis of the inaugural match, amazing crowd, disappointing result, but they hung with the top team in the Eastern Conference, a team that obviously had a lot more chemistry. They were able to gel a lot better because these guys have been playing for a couple of years.
7 years against 7 weeks.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's a huge difference there. So I understand that New York Red Bulls, they changed their formation. They got rid of Dax McCarty, sent him to Chicago Fire, which I still don't understand their offseason. I don't know why they did that.
It's like somebody lost a bet or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, yeah, okay, if I win this bet, you get Dax McCarty.
You're like, what?
Which is, that's crazy to me. But they still had Bradley Wright Phillips. He ended up playing a big role in this game. Expectations for this season. We come into the year and everybody's talking about the offense. They're talking about the speed of Villalba Martinez, Almiron. What are your expectations coming into this season? Is this a team that you think can compete for a playoff spot, or should we pull back on the reins a little bit and give them a few months to figure their lives out first?
You know, it's funny because I heard a lot of the experts are out there saying, you know, hey, this team should be in the playoffs. They got a really good chance to make the playoffs. And I'm like, we haven't even seen them play. I know how hard it is to put guys who haven't played together, 11 guys together. We see it all the time when you watch the World Cup. It's these guys play club leagues.
I see it all the time with my FIFA Ultimate team.
Exactly.
I mean, I put a bunch of guys that don't have any chemistry. And
they can't play at all. You look at Argentina a lot of the times. They got some of the best players in the world. You try to put Messi and all of them together on an Argentinian team, they don't do anything. It's like, I mean, it's tough to take 11 great individuals and make them play as a team on such short notice. So I didn't really have the expectations beforehand is that this team would make the playoffs. I thought they'd be competitive. I thought they would be really exciting and give us great, you know, soccer to watch. But I never thought it would be what I saw. Now, after seeing what I saw, I think there's a really good chance they'll make the playoffs because I think that back line is just going to get better as weeks go on. Communication is going to get better. And I think the offense is going to be even better. I mean, from what we saw, if that's them at 7 weeks, I can't wait to see them at 10 weeks and 12 weeks together. And now understanding exactly how this offense works, exactly what your role is in that offense and how to make it better. So I definitely, if you ask me, I think they should be playing for the playoffs.
So if you go back now, we've had about 24 hours to digest coming into this podcast. Who for Atlanta United is your man of the match? I think if we're talking about the game in general, Robles is the man of the match.
Yeah, on the other side.
Bulls,
he pretty much kept them in the game. He kept them in the game. He was without him, they're down 4-0. Yeah. So, I mean, and they have no chance to get back in the game. So I think for the game in general, I say Robles. But when it comes to our side, I think Garza was all over the field. Like you said, I mean, our first goal, he's in the box, and you're like, dude, you're supposed to be way back there. Yeah. And for him to be running up there, I think he was all over the place, helping out on defense, pressing up on offense. I think that at the end of the day, he was in everything that was good that was happening for us. He was somehow involved in it, and I thought that he played an amazing game, and I'm looking forward to see what he can do for us going forward.
He certainly traveled the farthest distance in the game.
Man, I would love to see his Fitbit steps. I mean, he was all over the place.
Greg Garza's Fitbit.
Yeah, exactly.
So on my side, I was going to go with Garza, but let's pick a different one. I was so impressed with Miguel Almiron. Now, I'll say that with a bit of an addendum. Almiron is so fast, and he always plays in fifth gear. That's a good thing and a bad thing. And I think Almiron, as he gets older,
we watched that with Dennis Schroeder all the time.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yeah. I think as he gets older and he gets more mature, he's going to learn how to pull back on the reins a bit and gear down into second gear and go slow in traffic every once in a while.
Ronaldo was the same way when he played with Man United. The same way. He's
right now,
fast attacker.
Yeah. Right now, he just has so many skills and he has so many tools, and those were really on display. One moment that really impressed me was when he dribbled out from among three defenders.
Oh, yeah. All you heard was the ole chants. Ole, ole. Like, that was amazing ball handling right there.
Incredible. That was my jaw is still sitting somewhere in the press box at Bobby Dodd Stadium after that. But
He's definitely showing you flashes of something that could be really magical going forward.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to be the last time I pick Almiron as my man of the match.
Yeah, I mean, if he'd made that chip, we both would have been saying it now. Like, oh, man, that chip was so close.
And, of course, they gave it up to the fans to vote for their man of the match. And, of course, a lot of people are just looking at the goal. They say Yamil Assad, he was the one who booted at home. Assad played a big role in this game. He's got a big role in United history now.
Yeah, he'll be the trivia question.
Exactly.
He'll be the trivia question.
Yeah. Tyrone Mears to Yamil Assad. What's funny is that on my Twitter, I said, Atlanta will never forget these words, Tyrone Mears to Yamil Assad. Except I said in the 24th minute.
Oh, see.
So you will forget those words.
You will forget that because it was the 25th.
Go ahead and forget those words because it was the 25th.
Oh, don't worry. On Twitter, they'll remind you about that. So you're good, dude.
Nobody's reminded me, actually.
See? If you skip Bayless, boom.
I pinned it, and I was waiting for somebody to remind me. Now they're going to hear it on the podcast.
Where's the edit button on Twitter? Come on, let me just go back and change that part, and I'm good.
Well, coming up on Sunday, first road fixture for this Atlanta United side, and it's going to be the two expansion teams, and two teams that really went about it differently.
Oh, yeah.
And build it. We talked to Darren Eales during our pregame show on Sunday, and he said they've taken kind of a slow and steady approach, and there's no right or wrong way to build an MLS team. This is just Minnesota United's way. They've really kind of stayed pat from their NASL days. They've got a number of playmakers who are from that old team, but can they compete in the top tier? They haven't signed any DPs. It's a very weird approach because you expect them to be more aggressive and really go hard after guys, especially considering they have those three DP spots. I don't really know what to expect from Minnesota United except for I look at them on paper and they just don't have anybody that stands out to me.
Yeah, and kind of to take the two parts you said. One, I think Darren's my boy, love him to death, but I think there is a wrong way to do it, and it's buying a bunch of 35-year-old European players on a team. I think that's the wrong way to build a team. I think they're doing it the right way with youngsters and guys that are hungry, that want to play, that want to produce and show something. I think that's the right way to build a team, and I think that's exactly what they're doing. So I know he won't pat himself on the back, but I will pat him on the back for it because I think they are building United the right way. You're right when it comes to tactics, when it comes to the way these two teams are set up. I think, yeah, it's apples and oranges. You have a team like us that wants to push the ball forward and attack and kind of stay on that front foot all game. When you look at Minnesota, they're a team who just wants to put they play great. They want to play defense and look for an counterattack. Yeah, so as a fan, if I was a new fan looking into this, yeah, I think that's a hard way to get 55,000 to show up. If you're just going to sit back and play defense and look in the counter, I think that's a really tough sell for fans. Now, you know, they may have their own thing. I'm glad that we're playing in Atlanta and we have a more aggressive style. So coming into this game, I see that we're going to have a lot of chances to score in this game. At the end of the day, I think that our back line just needs to stay focused and look out for those, like I said, those, because that's the problem. When you're always pushing forward, you don't have much coming back, so you tend to get, you know, kind of lazy with it. You kind of lose focus for a second, and that's the one time. Last thing you need is somebody clearing one and running deep, and all of a sudden you got one in the back of the net because they only got one shot, and that's the one shot they needed.
Well, that's one thing about Greg Garza selling out and not selling out. That's a negative term, but pushing so far forward, that leaves you one short on the back line.
True.
You're pushing so far forward, and
if you're
that,
not communicating with the guys,
that allows for counterattacks.
Yeah, that letting them know that, hey, I'm going, I need you to cover this way. All of a sudden, they're looking for you to be back there, and you're not back there because they didn't see you go forward. So I think that, you know, when it comes up this weekend, I think we have a really good chance. I'm excited about this game, and when I looked at this, it's kind of, when I was looking at this game, it kind of reminded me of how this station was set up. They're here for 99 a game. I remember when we first started, and everybody was talking about, hey, we had this great meeting, and when our program director, he ended up saying, like, I didn't make the station to be the best sports station. I made it to be the best station, radio station, period. Yeah. And so when I look at United, I think the same way. I'm like, we're not trying to be the best expansion team. We want to be the best team, period. So I think we shouldn't even start comparing ourselves to Minnesota and whatnot, because that should never be our goal, to be the best expansion team. It's to be the best team in the East, to win the East, and then go on to do bigger and better things. And so when I look at this game, I say, you guys need to go out there and do business. But at the end of the day, our goal is to go out there and be at the top of the East when it's all said and done. So I'm not trying to overlook anybody, but I'm confident about this game because the style we play and what I saw from last week, we should definitely go out there and handle business and then go forward.
And so 92-9 the game, they went out and they signed designated players like Kyle Tate and Craig Carlos Valentino.
And stuff changed. Ask Zeno. Ask Zeno. That's why his show's number one now. Just ask Zeno.
Well, in case you missed it on 11.6. In case you missed it on Friday. Minnesota United, they lost 5-1 to Portland Timbers. It was an embarrassing final scoreline, but it was a lot closer than 5-1 would suggest.
Yeah, for about 70 minutes, it was thin. All of a sudden, it just
two of their goals were in the 90th minute, stoppage time.
Yeah, I'm getting both of them actually in the 90th minute. I think, but that just shows you, like, at the end of the day, as professional players, you're like, you can't quit out there. You can't. And I mean, quit's a bad word, but you're like, you know, goal difference means a lot in this league, especially when it comes to soccer. You can't just go out there and give up five goals. 3-1, you know. Hey, just grind it out for three more minutes. Go out there and play a little bit harder and get off the field. And that's what I was mad about the Cremona thing. The same way, it's like, this game's almost over. You have to play this way a certain way for these youngsters, for them to understand that we play all out 90-plus minutes. There's no time to let off. You can't get mad and do something stupid and get you kicked out. Same way on defense. You can't be going into 3-1 in the 90th minute and give up two more goals.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you got fans that are out here supporting you and they have your back, and all of a sudden, now it looks like, like I said, when you turn in the next morning, go 5-1. You guys got killed, and not knowing that for 70 minutes, you played great defense.
Well, a couple of notes coming out of Sunday and heading into this coming Sunday. Carmona, by MLS rules, obviously with a red card, suspended for the next match. It's not like Premier League where you're suspended three matches.
Yeah.
It's just the one. By the way, Minnesota United is coached by a guy who has significant expansion team experience with Adrian Heath, formerly at Orlando City. He was let go midway through last season. But in Adrian Heath, obviously he has some experience with an expansion franchise, and he's hoping to take Minnesota United. I think Orlando City is a team that's kind of on the brink of something good, and they're hoping that experience will.
Because I mean, they got the new stadium. They're a really good team. That Kaká, him Kaká going down,
injury,
that's going to be brutal for them. We'll see how. But the one thing that Seattle told us last year is, if you can hang around in the first half of the season and come on strong the second half, you can be champion. So if they can weather that storm, you know, Orlando City is going to be a team we're going to have to talk about later.
So that'll be coming up. This will be a weekly thing off the woodwork from 92.9 The Game. Again, he's Craig Carlos Valentino. I'm Kyle Tate. Thanks for joining us on this first podcast. I think it turned out okay.
Yeah, we got the chance to talk some soccer without bosses yelling at us, without people calling in telling us to talk football. I'm like, this is actually a lot of fun to be able to do something that we're both passionate about.
Can't wait for Sunday at the University of Minnesota. That's where United is playing their games as Atlanta United.
Oh, because they don't play football there no more, I heard. Oh,
yeah. Well, wow.
See? Shots fired.
College football zinger. Goodness. But yeah, thanks a lot for joining us again. It's Off the Woodwork. We'll have this for you on a weekly basis. Can't wait to talk more United, MLS, international soccer, whatever comes up. Again, you can follow the station on Twitter at 929TheGame. You can tweet me ideas, questions. We'll have a mailbag segment coming up next week at Here Kyle Tate on Twitter, and he's at Craig C. Valentino. Join us every week. Off the Woodwork. CCV, good work, buddy.
Later.
Carmona switches it. Dangerous ball. Flip back, posted it! First goal in Atlanta United history is in the-